This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome to this very exciting episode. Today we have Anthony Katz, who is the founder of HyperIce, that just got recently valued at $700 million, which is absolutely ridiculous. It is one of the fastest growing companies in our industry in fitness. And obviously they are the recovery tools that now are the sponsors of or partners with the NBA, partners with the MLB, partners with the UFC. They are basically taking on every team in the world, every sporting organization in the world. So we feel very honored to be a part of their partnerships. And we also feel very honored to get the founder on. Obviously, he's an extremely busy guy. He's got a lot of things, a lot of moving parts in his life. But he did carve out the time to talk to us about HyperIce. And it's one of the coolest stories. I think any founder that's had interactions with professional athletes as, I guess, kind of the birth point of his products and his business can only make for a great interview, which is what we got.
Yeah, this is like a story. If he had a boring story of how he met up the company and then he created an exciting story just for fun for his friends, this is the actual story.
Yeah. No, this is an amazing episode. Obviously, we won't spoil the stories too much, but there is the Kobe Bryant story in there, which kind of birthed his first product. So an amazing story, amazing interview. Thank you to Anthony for coming on the show. Guys, of course, you're going to hear a lot about HyperIce and its founding and the products on this episode. So if you want to go and check them out, it's hyperice.com. Our code is MMP. You can use it with any product on the website in any part of the world, and you will get 15% off any of those orders. So let's just get into kind of all the details of that. And if you guys feel the need to want to jump on board one of those products, you can use it. But before we dive into the interview, guys, we are bringing on a new partner today, something a little bit different but relevant, something that we have been, something I guess sort of had our eye on for a while just because the founder is a friend of ours. And this company is called Fitify. And the name is probably not as obvious as what the company is right now, but currently this is a technology company. They are a dating app. They are a dating app specifically for people that are into fitness. So we just thought it was a really cool product. Obviously, we are both not single. We have been using the app undercover just to kind of explore the back end of it. But if you are in the dating scene, if you're single, obviously you're using dating apps almost, I would say, exclusively. It's a very popular method. Tinder, Bumble, Hinge, they're all massive apps. There is one specifically, I think if you're a fitness person, if you are into training, into eating healthy, it's an extremely high value, maybe the highest value for you in your life. It's pretty hard to connect with people who don't share a similar value. This app just makes it really easy, right? I just imagine in the future, more and more of these apps are going to be used for more niche,
specific
interests and values, right? I guess people have them for different religions. People have them from different sexual preferences. And now they've got them for exercise preferences. So like part of finding or filtering for the person that you want, it's fitness interests from weightlifting, running, yoga, Pilates, bodybuilding. You can select those things. Dietary interests, vegan, vegetarian, macros, paleo, keto. But look, if you're part of the dating scene, there's no reason you can't add another dating app to your arsenal. If it gets you closer to finding the one, then it's doing its job. So okay, so for the best place to get on board Fitify, there is a link in the description of this episode. You want to go to that link. You don't want to go to the App Store. So make sure you go to the link in the description of this episode. Click on that link and it will send you to the place where you can download and install the app. If you find us on there, obviously, if you see me, swipe right. If you see Raph, swipe left. And then, let us know the results. Obviously, if it turns out extremely well, we have some friends on the app. They've been using it. This app works extremely well. It works just as good as any other app. They've definitely poured some serious money into this thing. It just needs users. It just needs you guys on there. So definitely go check it out. Link is in the description of this episode. All right, guys, let's jump into this episode with the founder of HyperIce, Anthony Katz. My Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode. Today we have on someone that I'm very excited to speak to. I feel like there are some really cool stories to uncover here. The founder of HyperIce, Anthony Katz. So Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No worries. So where I wanted to start this was with the story of how, and I don't know, I read some articles and then I listened to some podcasts, but I couldn't quite figure out the exact story of when you got in contact with Kobe Bryant. Now, if anyone knows anything about the Hyper Ice story, Kobe was pretty famous for using a lot of ice and ice packs, and then obviously you guys got connected somehow, which I want to know the story with, to kind of put your product on him, and then we can circle back to how you kind of started Hyper Ice. But tell us the Kobe story first.
Yeah, everyone always wants to know the Kobe story, so I'm more than happy to share it. And I never shared it in the media until recently. Brian Windhorst from ESPN did a good piece on it. And so, I was actually living in Australia. It was 2008, 2009. And then, I had just sort of, stepped away from like my day-to-day life here in, Southern California. And I think sometimes when you move somewhere and you're in a different culture and there's a whole different set of sensory input that you get every day. And it probably, spurs creativity, which I think is a good thing. I think it's a good thing that people move around and have different experiences because it's, it spurs different ideas. And I was about 30, 31 years old at the time. And I was sort of for the first time noticing like, my body was getting a little bit more sore. I was kind of experiencing some like pain that I never felt before. And I was like, okay, this is what getting older feels like. And it sucks. And what do professional athletes do to like so they can play? I mean, there's guys that I follow professional sports that play well into their 30s, and so the term recovery didn't really exist. Like when I remember recovery meant sort of alcohol recovery or it didn't have the same context back then because there was no recovery brand. And so I just noticed that athletes would ice a lot, and so I kind of did some research, and that the two things that athletes would really do would be cold tubs or ice baths, and then they would ice their joints. And then, for athletes that had, could afford it, they'd get massages regularly. And so I was like, okay, well, like what recovery product could like, what could I start doing? Maybe I'll start icing. And so I started looking into icing, and that, really the way that guys did it was strapping a plastic bag of ice and compressing it to their body with either an ACE wrap or some sort of like plastic wrap. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that hasn't changed ever. Like, that's just been the same thing. There's no product. And so around this time, the summer before that, in summer 2008, Beats by Dre was launched their brand through USA Basketball, where, like, all the USA Basketball players got off the plane wearing the Beats by Dre headphones. And, it started this kind of, like, there was this, like, buzz about this, this really cool company that all these athletes and celebrities were using these type of headphones. It wasn't until later, until 2012, where like they really took over the whole Olympics and the brand really, really took off. But I kind of had, there was enough of like an understanding that I had, even though I had no business background. I was a high school teacher, history teacher. I had no real experience or really interest in going to business, but I kind of had this kind of just understanding that athletes have influence over the broader culture. And I said, if, athletes are wearing headphones and people think that, it gives the product like legitimacy and credibility, that if I can get an app, because I see athletes wearing ice bags all the time, they wear them on the bench and their knees sometimes, they'll football players or pitchers like wearing them on their shoulders. I'm like, if there was something that I could get the athlete to wear, because I'm not going to compete with Nike or Adidas or Under Armour, but like if there was icing was this thing where I could say if I could make it cool enough where it was like the go-to for athletes, you'd have kind of the Beats by Dre effect where you'd have all these influential people and culture wearing it. And then it would go downstream into like, high school athletes. And then like, maybe like, medical and post-surgery because people ice post-surgery. And so that was sort of my, I said like, I want to design the coolest icing product I can. Mm. And and I didn't want to change like the agent, like the actual real ice. All the research I did was saying like real ice is like the most trusted, and that's why you don't see professional athletes wearing gel pack. They always use real ice. So I'm like, okay, so I'm not going to change that. So what can I do to create like that same, where I'm not changing the actual agent that's doing the cooling, I'm just delivering it in a more cool way, in a sleeker way, a cleaner way, a better way. And so I started, just as an art project, I started cutting up neoprene from, I went to a wetsuit factory. I live in Southern California. There was like one wetsuit factory left. I was buying scrap neoprene. And then I was literally like cutting up the scissors into these different configurations to where it would like really like wrap the body well. And then I'm like, okay, now the ice needs to sit under here. And so I was using like off the shelf medical ice bags at the time. And then I was cutting a hole in the ice bag for like, so it can go around like the neck. And then it was kind of compressing to the body. And so I had these like sort of cut up samples in my car, and a friend of mine who was a basketball coach at UC Irvine, he was assigned to basically let Kobe Bryant in the gym to work out because Kobe lived in Newport Coast, which is about less than 10 minutes away from UC Irvine, which is a university. And my friend was an assistant basketball coach, and Kobe wanted to come in at weird times, you know, 1 a.m, 6 a.m, 5 a.m. And the coach was like, okay, we're going to give it to like the lowest level assistant we have. So he's going to have to get out of bed and let him out, let him in the gym. And so my friend's name, Ryan Battertelli, is still there at UCI. He's now the lead assistant. He was letting Kobe in, and then Kobe was like, hey, you're sitting there. Why don't you work out? You know, why don't you get up and help? And so Ryan started working Kobe out, and they started to develop a relationship. And Kobe, being a guy who worked out 6-7 days a week at the time, you know, this is the summer of 2009. They had just won their first champ, his fourth championship, but it was the first one he had won in a while. And, you know, so this is like the prime of his career. And so he's working out a lot. And so Ryan had everyday access to him. So I naturally was like working on these prototypes, and I was knowing that I would see Kobe Bryant ice on the bench in the fourth quarter of a game where he wasn't going back in. So where they were up by like 20 or 30 points, he'd already start icing kind of like to like recover for the next day. And I was like, if I can make it cool enough where it looked good and it looked better than that. Cause the ace bandage, and you can, if you Google like Kobe Bryant icing, like it's just like these gross, like ace bandages, or they're beige. They're just like the worst looking thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I can make something that look cooler and work better than that, I think I can get him to wear it in the bench. And so, Ryan never really introduced anyone to Kobe cause Kobe's super private. And so when I showed Ryan my designs, I'm like, hey, I think I have a better way of icing than just out of a plastic bag. And he's like, I know why you're asking this, because you want me to show Kobe. But he's like, all right, let me kind of feel him out. And then like it, right away, he didn't respond. And it was like all of a sudden, like it was a Saturday. I was in L.A. and I got a text that said, hey, Kobe wants to see your icing thing. We get done at 9 o'clock tonight. Be at school. So like, I like drove down from L.A. because it was about, you know, 45-minute drive. I like canceled my plans, whatever. And I had like a card, like basically like a cardboard box with all like my samples in it. I had like a couple different versions of like cut up neoprene. And, like, you know, I had grown up huge Laker fan my whole life, you know, all going all the back to the '80s. Kobe and I were about the same age. So I kind of followed his career, you know, I'd been to Staples Center probably 1,000 times for games. So it was a big deal, and he's such a big icon here. So,
yeah.
And this is before I started working with athletes. So I didn't, you know, I knew some, but I just didn't know, you know, someone of his stature. And I remember just him, he had a presence about him, just, you know, walking up from the gym and seeing him. And I was like, wow, I was like, you know, I'm basically going to present this, my idea to, you know, to this icon. And so he just walked in the room. He goes, all right. He's like, he puts his legs out and he goes, all right, ice me up. So like, I went to the ice machine, and at colleges have all these really nice ice machines with the little nugget ice. It's really small. It conforms to the body. So I filled it up and put it on. And he's like, all right, so your idea is that you want to come up with a better way to ice. And I was like, yeah, essentially, like, I want to make it cool. And he's like, and at this point, honestly, it was pretty crude. It had black neoprene, but the ice bag wasn't very pretty. I had made stickers with his logo, his Nike logo on it, put them on the ends. And he's like, all right, well, what I'll do is I'll use them for a while, and then I'll let you know what I think. And so throughout that, like, you know, we sat there and talked about how he's like, you know what, I like the idea of having something that's not just a plastic bag. And he goes, if you can make it so it gets tight enough and it doesn't leak and all the different things that he wanted, he goes, that could be good. And so a couple weeks went by. So we talked for like 20 minutes, and a couple weeks go by, and I'm like waiting for the feedback. Like, I'm hoping that he's going to say, oh, I love this. It's a great thing. But Ryan says, hey, Kobe has some feedback for you. Come back at, you know, whatever, 6 o'clock this time. So I go back, and he's like, all right, look, he's like, there's a couple of things. Number one, the bag doesn't get cold enough, because when I use a plastic bag, it's like paper thin, and this thing is like rubber. It's a little bit thicker. He goes, so you got to make the bag thinner. And he goes, also, you've done a good job with the neoprene, because this wrap gets really tight. But what it does is it pushes all the air of the in the bag to the top. So when I tighten it, instead of the wrap tightening the pushing on the ice, it's pushing on this like this little air, like little air pocket. And with a plastic bag, what we do is we just basically, we just like poke a hole in it, and we poke it up top. And then that's why they leak, because people want to get out to the ice converter. So he was like, so you created a problem by making the wrap so tight, which I want it to be tight, but I just don't want it to be, you have this air trapped in there. And so, and he goes, but I like the idea. If you can get there to where it's better that it's colder and it's tighter and it looks good. He was like, I'll wear it on the bench. And wow. That was sort of his like kind of like challenge he threw out to me. And I wasn't like, and then as he was kind of like, you know, we kind of talked a little bit as he's walking, he goes, oh, one more thing. He goes, you should make the bag square. He goes, it'd be cooler because right now it's round. And if you look at the way the knee is, there's like a lot of like tissue here on the side that like round is cutting off and you want to cover that. It gets better coverage. And it kind of reminded me of the movie Social Network when Justin Timberlake is playing, I think it's Sean Parker, who was the founder of Napster.
Yeah.
And he meets Zuckerberg. And at the end he goes, oh, and you should drop the on, he goes, it should just be Facebook. It's clear. And that was sort of Kobe's like last thing. He goes, oh, and you should make the bag square. That was his last thing. So I was like, okay, I got to make a square bag. I got to make it thinner so it gets colder. And I go, and I have to figure out a way to get air out of it. And so I thought, like, just what's the thing? Like, it's almost like the dumbest thing ever. It's like, where do you get the idea? I'm like, well, people always think, oh, what if there was a button I could just press and it would do X? Like, how many times do you say that? It's like, oh, you know, when you round someone annoying, what if there's a button I could just press on you and just shut you up? the button is like, a push button is like just the simplest way of like giving something a command you want it to do. So I'm like, what if there was a button right here and just sucked all the air out? And I'm like, that would solve that problem and I can make the bag colder and then I can make it square. So that was like my three challenges. So I realized I didn't have the capacity to do it on my own. And so I had these cut up prototypes and I had like basically these requests from Kobe that said, so I'm like, hey, if I build it, he'll wear it. So how am I going to do that? So I had got connected to this manufacturing company that does aerospace manufacturing here in Orange County. And I was like, these people are like, someone told me to go meet them. Like, they're not going to want to do this. This is like, and so I went in, there's like, I'm in the waiting room, there's like pictures of like rockets on the wall and stuff. I'm like, this is such a waste of time. Like, I want to make an ice bag with a button. And so luckily I met with like the engineer, and engineers love challenges, and he's actually sitting in the room over there because today, to this day, he's still my engineer, and he's our VP of engineering now. I presented him the problem, and I'm like, look, I need an ice bag to release air. This is how to do it, and we need to develop a skin that's really, really thin that transfers cold really fast. And I had looked up some material specs that, like, you know, like medical grade latex would be the best because the temperature passes right through it. And so I had kind of done some homework and research, and he's like, okay, I think, you know, this is something that we wouldn't make internally, but we could help source this for you. And so, you know, we ended up, you know, having an arrangement where like they did the development on just this what we call the ice cell. We went to a medical formulator to formulate the material, the skin, which is the latex skin. And it was a real challenge getting it to be square because everything in the world that is made out of latex is pore molded or dip molded. And everything is round, balloons, condoms, everything else. But this is something that we wanted square, represent a lot of challenges. The manufacturer was like, can we just make it round? I'm like, nope, it's not one of that. That's, you know, we have very specific instructions. It has to be square. And so we went through this process of, you know, a year of developing, you know, I developed the wraps and got to look, you know, the way I wanted and was working with different materials from Japan. I had a really good supplier here. And just, it was an art project. And it was just like an art and science project, both. And 2010, summer of 2010, late 2010, Lakers won another championship, and I had got to Kobe, and I got to other players, and it's like I did what he that's what he asked for, and we were able to nail it, and so that got us into the athlete community. It wasn't just Kobe; it was like it got to him, and he started using it, but not really telling a lot of people about it. He sort of used it for the first year, and then it wasn't until like, I'd say probably like a year or two later that he started wearing it like more out in, like he would wear it, you know, in photographs and on the bench and after practice. And, but yeah, that was sort of, you know, he was sort of, when I said the inspiration behind High Price, he was like, you know, had he just said, oh yeah, this is good, great, I'll use it, and never give me any feedback. I don't know, you know, what would happen. So, and then I became friends with him later. It wasn't until 2013 when he ruptured his Achilles. And he reached out to me, saying, hey, like, cause I had sent him I made him an Achilles icer just because I was sad that he got hurt. And then that's when we started to develop more of like a, you know, sharing ideas about branding and marketing. He was really interested in that. And he had, this is before he had done any investment. So he was sort of just like, you know, most of his network was in LA. I happened to live 10 minutes away from him in Orange County. So we would meet. He had a bungalow at, like this little like villa at in Newport Coast at this place called Pelican Hill. And we used to just go and talk about basketball. We talked about film. We talked about branding. He was so interested in like, how are you going to build a recovery brand? And because he was so into recovery, and he was like, he felt he had was the master of recovery, because he's like, I care more about this than anyone. So if you're going to have a recovery brand, you should listen to some of my, you know, ideas. And some of his ideas were really great. Some of his ideas were maybe probably because he was a player and maybe not addicted, connected to the average person. But yeah, it was, I mean, those times were, you know, there was a period of time where I was, you know, we talked regularly, and it was a good about year that happened. And then once he kind of focused back, he got back from his injury, started playing again, he focused on basketball. And in the story, the ESPN story talk, I reconnected with him sort of last year. But yeah, it'll always be part of the story. And, you know, it was, obviously really tragic, and just for the whole world, it was just a loss of this like person who inspired so many people. And I think that I wrote some caption for one of our posts one day, and it was just like, you know, he inspired everyone to like, you know, there's a Mamba in all of us, and he just inspired everyone to find that. So, but yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about. When I was going through it, it never seemed that crazy. It was just like, okay, like I got to make this for like, you know, for Kobe, this is what he wants. And then looking back on it, and I hadn't told the story in a long time until I told Brian Windhorst from ESPN. And I was like, yeah, you know what? It is pretty, you know, it's not the typical founder story, put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's, well, I appreciate you sharing that. That's a really cool story.
Was that too long? That was a long version.
No, the longest version is the best version, I would say. So,
surely, did you lose faith like in this year? Because there's a whole year you were building it, right? But you like, am I going to go back and he's completely forgotten about this whole thing?
I was really confident that, and maybe it was just my just blind optimism or naivete that, hey, if I build this, like I always felt like it, like if I put my mind to something, like I was like, I know we're going to get there. Cause I was working with the engineering company I was working with were really good, we had pulled some good people into the project. We pulled a medical formulator. Southern California's got so many resources. So like, we had a medical formulator working on the material, and we like nailed the color, and we were working on the consistency with like, you know, my engineers, you know, VP of engineering now is an expert in molding. So like, I kind of felt like I put really good people around me, which is really my only skill, is putting really good people around me. You know, Steve Jobs said, as a founder, you have to be the ultimate talent scout, and you have to find people that are just really, really talented and dedicated at what they do. And you have to do that a lot of times, make a judgment on someone with very little information. It's one thing if you get to know someone for 10 years and you know all about them, but a lot of times you're hiring really important people or bringing people onto your projects that are really important, that you got to go with a hunch or whatever you think of them after one meeting or an interview. And that's, to me, where I feel like whenever anyone, you know, asks, like, oh, what's the one piece of advice? You know, I'm starting a company. I'm like, just, you have to be the best talent scout. The people that you put around will determine, you know, because no one person could build a company on their own. So,
yeah.
And no one bats 1,000 either. So like, you're going to pick some people and put it around you that might not have worked out or whatever, but like, you know, you have to bat a high enough percentage to where the people around you are helping to, you know, kind of push everything forward and sort of mask for the things you're not good at. So, and then eventually you get to the point where I have to do less and less of the things I'm not good at. And so, and really focus on the things I am. So that was sort of the, you know, if people say, what's the difference between your job now when you started? Well, in the beginning, it was just me in my car, and I'm driving around just doing everything. Like, you know, like going to my production facility and going to like, you know, to go get this on an athlete, meeting with an agent and raising money and doing all this stuff. And now it's much more concentrated to what I'm good at doing. Yeah. Which is product development. And then, you know, brand content and sort of like kind of art directing the brand, and then like sort of the big picture strategy stuff, which I'm comfortable in that role. And it's great that I have these people around me that really carry the load.
Mm. Now, high price isn't just ice, it's heat and it's vibration and percussion and all these different tools. How do you, what is your process for deciding what you want to bring in? Because there's so many recovery devices out there. Well, so do you have like, do you like look at research? Do you look at science? Do you just have a hunch about these things? Like what makes you choose the different products to bring onto your brand?
Well, let's peel back the onion a little for it. So I'll give a little bit of a snapshot now. Now our ice compression technology line is like about 1% of our business. So it's very small. And the reason why is because it has a smaller use case. So there's just way, like, the company's name, Typer Ice, the stories about that, we raised money on that, like that, there's so much about it, but that is a very small part of our business now. And so if you get like the evolution of the brand basically started as like, there was no recovery brand at the time when I started, right? There was, you know, on the East Coast, there was a guy who was building the sports division of Normatec. At the same time I was starting Hyper Ice, but we were both sort of doing the same thing. We were both like trying to push this thing of, you know, I'm pushing the concept of like, you know, being proactive and like, you know, icing after you play to like break the inflammation cycle to prevent, you know, soreness. He was pushing dynamic lymphatic compression and, you know, dynamic air compression with the Normatec system, which was a $5,000 medical device at the time, and trying to get athletes to like sit in these giant leg boots, which that seemed really, really kind of hokey. Like at least athletes, you were used to icing. Like, I feel like I was pushing a ball uphill. He was pushing a heavier ball uphill. It's like, hey, I know your athletes want to get into this like medical device that's used for old people, but he had this idea to like, what if we take this device that's used for old people and to put it onto a young, healthy body? And the results were anecdotally were really, really positive. And then the science caught up to that to confirm that. But for me out on the West Coast, I was like, okay, ice, because that's the only thing that I've heard of, right? There was no other recovery technologies there. When you're starting an industry or category, you don't have the roadmap. You have to, you're trying to see around the corner to think of like what's going to be next. So when I had the ice, I had enough pro athletes using it and enough guys, specifically in the NBA and the NFL, where I was getting invited to go into teams training rooms and meeting the trainer and meeting strength coaches. And I was like, okay, while I'm here, instead of trying to sell them what they're already using, why don't I figure out, like, get some intel on what this industry, where it's going? And I would look around and I would see like, and I would always ask, I go, hey, what do you think like the next thing is? You know, cause like I wanted to develop another product. And a lot of them would say, well, I don't know what the next thing is, but everything's about soft tissue now. Like we have masseuse come, like guys want like soft tissue work. And so I would look in the corner and I would see like a mound of like foam rollers and lacrosse balls and softballs. And this is like what going all the way back to like 2012. And then like guys hate doing it, but we make them do it. Like foam rolling was becoming part of the thing. And then I would see these vibration platforms like PowerPlate, ViPlate. And I'm like, okay, like, so there's this, all this science is about vibration, because they were all talking about, oh yeah, there's a lot of good stuff about vibration. And then everyone's doing so. So I was thinking vibration, soft tissue. I'm like, what if I just took the mechanics of that and put it into something? Because this is a $10,000 piece of equipment that not everyone's going to have in their home, but a foam roller is kind of ubiquitous now.
Yeah.
So the idea was to take the same sort of scientifically backed frequencies and amplitudes, and with lithium ion battery technology and motor technology, figure out a way to get that force into this little space. And so the idea for the Viper was the second product, which is the vibration foam roller. And I remember, you know, having the idea back in, you know, like early 2012 and going to players and I said, I want to have this idea for a vibrating foam roller. And it just felt like to them, and it felt to me like, yeah, that could work, you know, like, cause it's such a static, cause foam roller is essentially static pressure. You're decompressing the layers of tissue and then you roll off and the layers you compress the layers of tissue. And then as you roll off, the layers decompress, compress and decompress. But it's this really like kind of static experience. It's not very pleasant. So I thought vibration does, you know, has a different connection with the brain and the nervous system that feels good. And I'm like, well, what if we could do it? So I spent from 2012 to 2014 with my team developing the Viper. And the Viper was really like a breakthrough product for us. I mean, the company's sales grew 5x.
Wow.
The first year we launched the Viper. I knew then that soft tissue was like way, that the market was way bigger for people that wanted soft tissue stuff than wanted like icing products that were really, they'd ice when they had to. But no one would just go, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, Kobe and LeBron wear it, so I'm going to go buy it.
Yeah.
It was like, no, if I sprain my knee, I'll get it, but I don't need it right now. Where a Viper was something you could do every single day. I could warm up with it. I'm sore. I could recover with it. So the company grew 5X, and it was like, okay. At the time, I remember in 2012, I was at USA basketball camp in Vegas, and I was having sushi with Blake Griffin, and I said, hey, I'm developing a vibrating foam roller. And he goes, that's a great idea. He goes, I use a vibrating hammer before every practice, every game. I love it. It's the best thing ever. I'm like, vibrating hammer. I'm like, oh, I want to see it. And so I went in the training room when, you know, at later date saw it. And it was a device called the DMS. And the DMS was the first percussion device. So all this, like, I hate the word. I won't even say the massage gun word. I can't stand it. because it's such a, like, lame answer. But really, it's a percussion device. And DMS was the first percussion device. And it was developed in the mid-2000s, which was the first decade of the 2000s. I think it came out around 05. And it was the first one. And it weighed about 8.5 pounds. It was a plug-in. It had one head that came on it. It was all metal. It was super crude. Mm-hmm. But guys loved it. The players liked it. The therapists and the trainers were always administering it, saying, it's heavy. It gets hot, so you have to stop using it after a certain amount of time. It's not ideal, but the guys love it.
Hmm.
So Blake was like, "That." He's like, I love it. I'm like, huh, the vibrating hammer. You know, this is interesting. And so we kind of started in on that because we were – developing a hypersphere, which is just the Viper in a ball form, essentially. So we started to think about that, like, you know, hey, maybe there's something to this percussion device. And I had numerous people, my head of my scientific advisory board, Mike Clark, was saying, you got to make a better DMS. Like, DMS is awesome for the person receiving it, but it sucks for the person giving it. So if you could make a better version of the DMS, there's a huge market. And all the science is about percussion. This is back in 2012. This is like, you know, 4 years before any of these, like, you know, jigsaw companies started marketing jigsaws and percussion devices. So in 2014, we were turned on to a small group of a physical therapist, someone who was trying to develop a better version of the DMS, but had run out of funding and had it like about 80% of the way there. But they had a prototype, and it was actually the trainer at Lakers, it was Gary Beatty, called me up to the training room and said, hey, this is just going to die in the vine, because I have one. There's like three of them in existence. They're all prototypes, but they don't have the money to go forward, and they have to figure out how to make these. It's just one thing to make one. And so we ended up purchasing that company and bringing it to market under the name The Raptor. So we named it The Raptor, and The Raptor launched in 2014. And The Raptor was sort of like the Ferrari of the percussion devices. It was expensive. It was $3,000. DMS was like $2,750. So we were slightly more expensive than DMS, but everyone kind of had ditched their DMS and was gravitating towards the Raptor. And the Raptor, what it did was it taught us a lot about what are the do's and don'ts for a percussion device. How much, you know, the size of the motor, diameter motor that delivered the amount of power, and then, like, you know, how the transmission worked. And we actually, I would say, learned as much of what not to do from the Raptor as what to do.
Right.
But there was a lot of things, and it had a cord. And it was a little bulky and not the most aesthetically pretty, but it really, really worked well. And we had, you know, it owned the percussion space for a couple of years there, from like 2014 to 2016. Then in 2016, you know, there was just a couple of companies that were opportunists that said, hey, the Raptor's $3,000. No one could afford it. Let's just sell a jigsaw as a Raptor, essentially, as a percussion device. And then that's when you had like the jigsaw companies come out and start marketing jigsaws at $500 that were, and it was, but in the wake that we created, it was the demand and the attention to percussion that we created. So to go back to the, you know, to question is that, like, how do we decide? It was really like, I just believe that everything is evolution and adaptation. Like, I feel like those two principles, like, you know, when you adapt, you evolve. And the only way to evolve is to adapt. And you have to adapt to, like, what is out there in the market? What is that? What is science telling us? What is the demand from the athlete, the training community? And I felt that there's demand for athletes for soft tissue products. There was a demand from the training staff for percussion devices that were scientifically backed and vibration devices. So we started, you know, and these didn't exist really. Like, you know, I mean, we invented the vibrating roller. We invented the dynamic, you know, vibration sphere. But there was, you know, percussion devices. It wasn't that we made the first one, because the DMS was first, and no one can dispute that. We just made it better. And then in 2018, we basically, I said, look, there are percussion devices out there that are loud and that are just, they're really just repurposed jigsaws. They have the same, all the mechanics are the same. They have a gearbox, same thing. And it's like, but those are designed for cutting wood. They're not really meant to work on your body. And when we launched the Hypervolt in 2018, that's when everything changed. That's when the demand globally for, and the awareness of what a percussion device was, sort of lamely referred to as a massage gun, that's when a whole craze of, like, you know, people using percussion devices has now become, like, it's a thing. It's like a hairdryer or a electric toothbrush, or it's become something that, like, is sort of part of, you know, a healthy person's you know, repertoire. So I think that in that way we influence, in that when people see the Hypervolt and they see it as this big, you know, it's our biggest product, but there was an evolution there. Like, without the Hyper Ice, I wouldn't have got into these, I wouldn't have had access into this world of performance trainers, you know, athletes and everything that would have kind of opened my eyes to, like, wow, there's this whole demand for this, like, space. Then the Viper, the development of the Viper taught us about electromechanical devices and, like, okay, lithium ion battery power to motors, to transmissions and all this stuff that translated into percussion devices. And then we land at Normatec, where, you know, Normatec had been the gold standard of recovery. They are the first recovery brand. I mean, they were the first really to make one device that was all about recovery. They owned the term. I mean, Hyper Ice was, you know, around the same time. They were a little bit before, but they were really, like, hammering that home. Like, on the Viper, we were focusing on performance and warm up and things like that, but there was recovery. And we just felt that the authenticity that Normatec had, I found that every athlete that used my product used their product. And when I was young, when I was, you know, starting out, you know, every athlete that used high price product used Normatec product. And I felt that, like, wow, there's something here. Like, these, there's the same athletes are gravitating towards it. And, like, these should all live in one brand. I had a relationship with the, with their founder, and you know, we did some stuff with the Department of Defense together. We had a great relationship, and we just felt that, like, you know, if this is sort of the, if the recovery industry is like the personal computer, you know, revolution in the early 80s, like, this is that moment where, like, you know, like, the Hypervolt's like the Apple II, right? And so this would be like Apple and Microsoft kind of coming together, and sort of the two brands that really kind of created the space are now kind of united.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. You found it interesting.
That's probably a long version of, but it gives you a scope of, like, how all the products came to be.
Yeah.
They all built on it. It wasn't just like, you know, you asked how they came to be. It's like, it was the ideas were constantly kind of growing out of one another.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Yeah. No, I wanted to hear that. I mean, that's what I think is cool, the story. What's interesting as well is during that timeline, you had probably one of the biggest explosions in the general population market for a demand for these products, which was gyms, right? You had CrossFit launching in, like, basically 2010, getting really mainstream, and that sort of branched off the Orange Series, the F45s, the Barry's Boot Camps. They all started coming in, and now you've got the general consumer. I think you've you know, basically heard you say that they're training harder. People are training harder just on a base level now. So the whole population is wants to be a professional athlete. So they feel like they're training like a professional athlete in some ways. They're getting in, they're intense, they're thinking about recovery, you know, way more than just, all right, I'm doing a chest day, then I'm doing a back day. Like, those guys don't, back then we weren't thinking about recovery and rolling or anything. So it's interesting how the timing of all these recovery devices synced up really nicely with the gym industry exploding and the general consumer having a really high demand or a big interest in recovery.
Yeah. And I have I'm from a very sort of health conscious, you know, forward thinking, you know, part of the country, you know, in Southern California. So I remember in the mid 1990s, if you worked out, I mean, that, it was really like sort of the fitness industry looked way different in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it was really, like, bodybuilders were, it was, in the 80s, the people that worked out were like bodybuilders, and then women went to aerobics, and then, but it really wasn't, I mean, 24 Hour Fitness wasn't even 24 Hour Fitness in the early 90s. When I first started going there, it was called Family Fitness. And that was the biggest, chain in the country. And you kind of had, you know, gyms being more like free weight kind of workout bodybuilding places. And then they slowly started transitioning into, okay, like, let's offer aerobics classes, which is aerobics, that word probably doesn't even mean anything anymore. And then it was sort of in the 90s, you kind of had, it was like the time where, like, okay, in the United States, it was 24 Hour Fitness and LA Fitness, and then probably the equivalent of like what Fitness First would be probably in Australia, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like a multi, you know, a national chain. And I just remember at the time, like if you worked out, it was like, oh, you work out. You're like one of those like workout people. And it wasn't as common. I mean, it was really kind of
gym rat.
It was definitely a subculture of people that worked out. And, cause it was weird. Like, hey, you don't play a sport, but you're just like working out to work out. And like in the '90s, that got a lot bigger. In the '80s, I don't think it was nearly as big. It was an even more niche community.
Mm.
And so in the '90s, you saw like the explosion of the supplement industry was a huge, mm-hmm. I think, was another thing that kind of happened that like really exploded at where it was like they deregulated supplements in the, I think around 1994. And then it was like, okay, well now you can work out. You know, the explosion of like, you know, the protein powder industry, like Metrics and EAS Sports, EAS, you know, started right around the early mid 90s. So then in the '90s you had that. And then in the 2000s that sort of continued where like big box gyms owned everything, right? The big gyms. And then into the 2010 to 2020 decade, that was the rise of the boutiques.
Mm.
It was smaller communities, more premium experiences. So you had, well, you had like, you know, 24 Hour Fitness was like just dominant during that from the 1990 to, you know, probably 2010 or whatever. And then you had like the Equinoxes and like Lifetime Fitness is offering a more family oriented experience. And then you had Equinox was like the premium, you know, was a premium experience. But then really in 2010, I think is when you started CrossFit, Orange Theory, you know, like way bigger, yoga got way bigger, you know, and Pilates got big. And then you had spin classes get big sort of like a couple years later. And it started to be like, and then various boot camps. And then you started to have like this, everyone being in one club in the '90s and early 2000s. And then it was like, okay, everyone wanted to get out of that experience and have these experiences that were more tailored towards them and that were more smaller community based. And so, you know, recovery speaks to all of that. That's the thing about it is it's the only, you know, recovery is not it's useful for high intensity or low intensity or high cardio, low cardio. So for us, it was always like, we're Switzerland. We're just neutral. We're not like partnering with any one community or choosing anyone. You know, people ask, oh, what do you think of this? What do you think? I'm like, it's all fine. Just move. We're made to move. Go do it in water, do it on land, do it everywhere you want. Lift weights, don't lift weights. There's a million ways to move and be healthy. But recovery is the one thing that like can help our body like prepare to move, reset to basically restore full range of motion so we can recover, improve our longevity, prevent injury, condition our soft tissue and fluid system to be healthy. So the way we look at it is that like the more the merrier, you know, the more things that people are passionate about, I'm all for it. I have my own personal things I like to do, but you know, I feel like that's sort of, you know, I think your question was pointed at the timing of when you guys kind of came up. Yes, I think everything's timing. I think the timing of the science of looking at the body different and stopping just to looking at this like collection of like, you know, skeleton and muscles and started to really realize that there's a lot more factors that play into how we move. And then you had like the professional athletes pushing this like envelope of recovery and performance. And then you had like this sort of fractionating of the fitness industry into all these like, you know, subcultures that all wanted to create the best experience possible. And our products sort of fit into all of them. Like, mm-hmm. you know, look, Normatec was huge in cycling, so it's going to be big in spin. You know, you have a Peloton bike, you could have a Normatec. You know, Hyperbole was, you know, so I think bigger in CrossFit, and you had different kind of products that serve different of those categories. But yeah, the subcategories they dominated from 2010 to 2020. And then now I think you're seeing the rise of the digital platforms.
Yeah.
And the at home, because I mean, I think it was sort of going there a little bit, but I think not nearly as big of a way because of COVID. Mm. So COVID just basically took this, because I still think that people really like the going somewhere and being connected to people. And that's part of the reason why they did spin or, you know, CrossFit or whatever it was. But you know, now I think that, you know, there's these events that happen that change human behavior. And I think that's what you're seeing now with the digital platforms. And now you see Apple, the biggest company in the world, now has launched a fitness platform. Peloton, the $22 billion market cap company. And now you're seeing Tonal and Form and Mirror and all these companies that are all trying to own this like at home. And, you know, I think the pendulum sort of just swings, right? It's, you know, it's dominated by these like, you know, by the at home, by the boutique fitness experience. Now the pendulum swinging back to like this more, you know, at home digitally connected. And then I'm sure it'll swing back. People will be tired of like working on their living rooms.
Yeah.
And so I think, so you just have to constantly be adaptable. And I feel like our brand is pretty adaptable to any of that. If people are doing it at home, great. If they're doing it at gym, fine. I mean, we have to adapt to meet the needs.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. Okay. So before we jump into the final four questions, Anthony, what do you see on the horizon for recovery? Like what is, you know, it was percussion at one point, the eyes, and what do you see is kind of next as the next frontier? I have some ideas about what I think might be coming, but I'm obviously, this is your wheelhouse. What do you feel is coming next?
Well, the one thing I try, people ask me that, and I always say that the laws of biology are not changing and the laws of physics aren't changing. So there are things that we know work. There, you know, there's a reason why people will sit in a Normatec for 45 minutes and spend, you know, $1,000 on a Normatec unit. Not because they're just superstitious. It's because they, there's a physiological difference that they actually feel and makes a connection with them. And they wake up and they're like, wow, that is a 9-day difference from how I felt.
Yeah.
Days I don't do it. There's a difference when people, when they use percussion devices regularly, they feel completely different in their soft tissue fluid dynamic. And so I feel like we've landed on modalities that work. Thermal therapies work when they're used at the right times. There's absolutely a use for heat. And there's absolutely use of heat for cold. If there's you treating acute injury, or you know, there's probably less uses where cold is good. But all these modalities is essentially you're just giving your body a command. So, what can we do to create a physiological response? We could use air pressure. We could use percussion. We could use vibration. We could use thermal therapy. So like all of these things sort of work to just basically give the body a command. And you just have to know what buttons to push and when.
Yeah.
Sequence is important, frequency is important, you know, intensity is important, all that stuff. As far as like what's going to be like the next like thing in recovery, I think it's so early to be thinking that, because the modalities that dominate the day now are percussion, dynamic air compression, and vibration, and then thermals on the tech side. Then there's hydration, sleep, nutrition, mindset. Those are the things that, like, you know, we could advise on, but like there's not products for, right?
Yeah. I mean,
obviously there's sleep tracking and stuff like that. But so I think with the future of it is to optimize and really give the person, the individual, a tailored experience of what they need, when they need it, time to do it. And the more data we collect on this through what we have a platform with the Hyperice app, is that the more data we get on people's habits, we can basically understand and learn, okay, you might say, if we say do 40 minutes of Normatec a day, if you're a cyclist or if you're doing spin class, okay, but when? Do I do it in the morning? Do I do it at night? How far after? And like, though, like locking in the times, because the body has this like sort of rhythm that if we really can like lock in and touch those points in the day of when it's optimal and how much hypermobile to do and when and how much thermal therapy to do, I think that the frontier is really understanding when, how long, what time, what products, what devices, rather than, oh, there's going to be some like magic thing that comes out that's just going to be like the cure. I just, there's no magic bullets. There's modalities we can do to the body. I do think that probably if you're asking what the next frontier is, it's probably something in the brain. And it's probably something pretty advanced, something above my pay grade. But hey, I hope there's a guy in a startup somewhere that has it and we're able to like work with them in some capacity. But I feel like if you'd ask me, because I really think that as far as like these like dynamic modalities we could apply to the body, I feel like we're kind of getting there. Now, red light therapy is pretty big and there's a lot of research on it and people like it. So I think that, but infrared saunas, I think, are pretty well established now. Probably getting that red light therapy or infrared into a smaller, more consumable device, because not everyone's going to put a sauna in their house.
Yeah.
So if you're asking me, like, so that would be one that I would say is probably, well, if you want to say next, I mean, it's here, but maybe someone figuring out a better delivery system for it, because I think there is some pretty good research around it. The research is pretty solid. But other than that, that would fall into the same thing. When to use it, how long to use it, rhythm, time, sequence.
Yeah.
And so I think all those things are still being sort of curated to each individual. And I think that's sort of where, you know, we craft the code, so to speak.
Yeah.
Has the amount of research that gets done in like studies on sauna, studies on massage, all this different type, is it gone through the roof? Like, is this something that just in general, like universities and stuff are putting money towards?
You know, it's funny, when we came out with the Hyperbowl, I was surprised how little research was done, because there were like not that many people even heard of the DMS. So it's like, who's going to do a study on percussion? It's not like it's this like thing that's really prevalent in the industry.
Mm.
So there was the studies that were done were limited, but they were really promising. And then you started to see sort of like, you know, even like smaller studies that were just done in clinics, and people like just the anecdotal research was like, wow, patient who, you know, had trouble walking because their hip complex was so tight and they lost so much hip mobility, using a percussion device for, you know, 20-minute treatment sessions, they were able to gain 40% range of motion in one treatment. So I feel like right now there's a lot of studies that are going on like right now that will come out over the next couple of years. One thing to keep an eye on is the research on the interstitium, which is when they said, oh, you know, scientists discover a new organ in the body, which not a new organ, it's been there the whole time. It just lives in this sort of like kind of fatty tissue in the fascia that people thought they just discarded it because they thought it had no function. You know, organs are defined by function, not by size or structure. So I think the way the interstitium is communicating with the central nervous system and proprioception, I think there's some studies that on that that I think are going to basically say, oh, by the way, Hyperbowl or vibration devices or air compression devices, this is why people are feeling this connection, is because there's some, the way they're interfacing with the interstitium is going to be something. That is a complete hypothesis guess on my part, so I'm not quoting any research. I'm just saying I think there's something there. It's just a hunch I have, and I've been right maybe one more time that I've been wrong. So.
That's cool, awesome. So, at first question that we ask all our guests is, if there's anyone that you could interview that is alive today, who would you choose and why?
I mean, it has nothing to do with my profession, but I'm just because I'm curious about like what goes on in the world. It would probably be Barack Obama, because he was a president for 8 years and I respected him a lot and still do respect him a lot. I actually have an artist friend who knows him and says he's an awesome person to talk to. And I just think that, like, you know, he's sort of, you know, like my generation's person when it comes to like, if I was going to sit down and I wanted to understand about the world and what people's experiences are, I would say, you know, I go back, you know, I'm really interested in film and music. I've been able to sit with people that my profession's allowed me to meet some really iconic people. Just when we were sitting here, I'm looking at my phone. I mean, I have a text from Kelly Slater, who's a huge icon, and I've, you know, being able to talk to people like him and musicians and people in film that have influenced the culture. I'm always grateful that I get to even share times, you know, Kobe, we talked about Kobe earlier. But yeah, I just think that there's something different about a world leader. It's just, I don't know any, you know, I know musicians, I know athletes, people in culture. I don't know any world leaders. So I would say Barack Obama.
What a different world, or what a different way we would be in right now if he was the president and not Trump, especially during this crisis, really, right? It'd be I think the voice that people need.
Yeah, and you know, and just a more sane world.
Yeah,
you know, I'll leave it at that. But I mean, that would be a 4-hour podcast if you get me on that one.
I'm sure it would. Second question: is there something that you try and do each day, and that you know, is critical to the success of the day, or leaves the day feeling more fulfilled?
You know, I think that, you know, okay, so first of all, like, you know, beyond like the things like personal hygiene, like, you know, brushing my teeth 3 times, showering, yeah, flossing, all that kind of stuff, right? When it comes to like, I'm 43. I have to be diligent about my, and I don't even, you know, it's called recovery, but like, let's just call it like my body care, right? So for me, I notice that I try to Normatec 7 days a week. I usually do 6. Sometimes there's always one day something happens, I pass out on the couch, and, you know, I used to like to do it at night. But getting on my Normatec every day is like part of a rhythm thing where, like, you know, your lymphatic system is the carrier of so much, you know, so many, you know, vitamins and nutrients that go through your body and pass through blood and your lymphatic system. And so, like, for me to get on that is like, it's like basically like an artificial pump that simulates being 17 years old, right? And so I notice huge differences when I'm on it. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons why we fell in love with the company. I was just in love with the product. And so I try to do hyper. So I have a hyperbolt at my desk. I have one in my car. I have two at my house. So wherever I am, if I'm sitting there not doing anything, I try to decompress my soft tissue layers and basically you know, use a hyperbolt for, on a good day, if it goes between my car, when I'm on calls in my office and at home, I mean, most good days are over an hour a day. So, but I'm doing something else. I'm on my computer. I'm on a call. I would say that I look at like soft tissue and fluid as like the two key drivers that you can interface with every day that you can help, right? By basically taking a percussion device, which compresses and decompresses layers of tissue, creates fascial space, moves fluid, changes the viscosity in the fluid, and then flushing the fluid out. If you could just do that every single day, like I always say, if I could just go back in time and give someone a Hypervolt Plus and a Normatec, and I can go to an athlete in any era, they would have such a massive difference. I was watching the Michael Jordan documentary this year. I'm like, wow, if I could just go back in time to 1998, and he was complaining about being tired and, you know, whatever. I was like, if I handed him a Hypervolt and a Normatec and gave him a routine, he would be at a completely unfair advantage. Because it makes that big of a difference. And so someone my age, like for me, those are the two things. I need to be better at sleeping more. I need to be better about a lot of other things, hydration. So, but you know, for me, and I don't want to sound like some, you know, some corporate shill who's just basically plugging our own products, but for me, that's two things in my routine that I do. The other thing I would say is like, I try to, and I can't do it every day, I try to jump in the ocean as much as possible. I live close to the ocean. I've always lived close to the ocean. I look at it as like it's the Earth's ice bath, right? It just gets you like, it just, there's something about like how invigorating that feels. I try to spend as much time in the sun as possible. You know, I just feel like it's, we're meant to be. And
yeah.
So if I know I'm going to be on a 40-minute call, I'll just go walk around outside and just get some sun.
Yeah.
So sunlight, jumping in the ocean, getting on a Normatec, using my Hypervolt, and then, you know, when it comes to diet and nutrition, that's another topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I definitely think, because, you know, we work so much on behavioral science and psychology and understanding our clients and how we can, you know, build better behaviors in. As soon as we obviously heard and, you know, got the Hypervolt, I was just like, the best part about this thing is now I can integrate it into any part of my routine super conveniently. And I just thought, what better time than when I'm watching Netflix? I'm like, really? I can't do a whole lot of things. I can't do a whole lot of things when I'm watching Netflix, to be honest, like a whole lot of recovery things. But this one, the best part about it is it's so quiet. And that was that was a huge difference. I'd used some other things like that before, but you can't watch a show when the thing is hammering it so loud that, you know, it just ruins the show for you. Same. So that's when I knew, I'm like, okay, this is good, because now I can integrate it into the routine and it just always sits there, same time. You're always watching Netflix at night. It's always going to sit there on the coffee table and it's just like, it's done. And that's I think, really the key, because you can put any great recovery device on the market, but if it doesn't integrate easily into someone's life, they're not going to use it.
And Normatec, exact same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You get your Normatec, it's all things that are really kind of compatible with our daily routine.
Yeah, and it's awesome. So third question, Ant, is what is something recently that you have changed your mind on that for a while you held as a strong belief?
You know, I think this is a principle that I think is important for all people, is that I'm always open to new evidence or learning something that disproves any held belief that I had. I'm not dogmatic about anything. I don't subscribe to any, you know, tribe or belief system that like forbids me from like, you know, evolving. I think that there's just you have to sort of, I always operate that like, you know, right around the corner is some harvest of new information or knowledge that could change something, you know, something that I feel strongly about. I think you know, in the context of my profession, there's, I didn't have my, in the context of my profession, I didn't have a lot of the, like these, like, you know, closely held beliefs that like I couldn't abandon, right? Because I didn't come from my profession. I actually came into it with a, you know, the background of history and political science and education. So when I got into, you know, oh, okay, I'm developing like an ice compression device. So now I'm in this sort of like sports performance world. I didn't have anything to go by because that's not, that was my educational background. So it only allowed me to like take what evidence, where the evidence led me. I didn't have any conclusions and I didn't have anything that like I couldn't hold on, that I had to hold on to. And I think that's maybe why we've adapted so fast and developed all these products and kind of created this company, is because we were not beheld to any sort of dogmas of the past, or, you know, that like, think about, like, I mean, I would say, look, the company was built, the company's named Hyper Ice. It was, we like built, that was the whole first product line. The products that we have now actually do the exact opposite to the body that icing does. It speeds lymphatic flow and increases circulation instead of the opposite. So I would say that, you know, but I just don't know that it wasn't a deeply held belief. It was just that it was the only thing that people were doing. So it wasn't like I was just so like married to it. I was easily, quickly to adapt to something saying, okay, well, this is going to do something completely different than ice, and it's going to have a different, it gets the body to respond in a different way. When it comes to other aspects of life, I think, when you have kids, you become a little bit more, I think you soften a little bit, you know? I don't know that I think also, you know, as you attain knowledge over time, you gain the ability to like see things from other people's perspective. And, you know, my hope is that when people actually have a better understanding or education or history of how other people live, they'll probably have it lends themselves to being more empathetic. And then when you're more empathetic, then you tend to care a little bit more and you tend to have a better perspective. So I think as I've gone on, I've tried to, educate myself and travel and experience, so that I can get a better broad perspective on the world. And I think that's definitely helped me in business, because it sort of, you know, you're not ever just like developing something for like one like type of person.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in my experiences, the people that travel the most are often the people that are best to get along, easiest to get along with, and the most interesting, right, by far.
Because once you travel and you meet people from different cultures, you realize that, like, you know, hey, look, whatever differences we have physically, we all really want sort of the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we're all more similar than people ever want to acknowledge. And people want to dig into these sort of cultural identities. And sometimes I think it's just like, you know, just get out there and you'll realize that, like, hey, the guy doesn't look anything like you or comes from a different background.
Mm.
It's kind of at the core of him or her probably wants the same thing. And so I think that's, you know, we become less tribal.
Definitely.
And I think it was Hemingway that said, like, you know, travel is a necessity and people in our culture need it, you know, because it, you know, Hemingway has a really great quote on travel. And when I see it, I recognize it. But I think on the grounds of just, you know, when, you know, isolation is a form of poverty, you know, it's when people just are isolated and have never integrated into anything else, they sort of have, they're just, their worldview is a lot more narrow. And so I think, when you're a founder of a global company, you need to have as broad a perspective as possible.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well said. And final question, I think it might have been written differently because we have changed it in the last week or so, but what personally for you has been the silver lining that has come out of a world pandemic?
Well, you know, I think this kind of goes back to the other question is like, you know, what... you said like what's a belief that you had before that maybe you don't have. So maybe this kind of ties in that one, is that I think there was just always the belief that like, hey, to develop good relationships, you got to like fly out for a meeting and you got to like go across the country to do something and like have all this face to face. And I think that the silver lining for the pandemic has been, I haven't been on a plane since it started. And, I've actually, in the time that you spend preparing to go, look, it's weird because I just said I love travel, and that's the whole key to everything.
Fucking hate planes.
That's travel for a different reason. Like, you know, I do miss the contact and the face to face and the meeting people. But those are like my big trips when I go over. When I go overseas, those are like usually important trips. But there's a lot of like domestic travel that we do that's just not necessary. And for me, it's like the silver lining has been that I get to see my two kids a lot. I mean, I was traveling not at a ridiculous amount. I always would try to only travel when it was necessary. But now, just like, it's literally every Saturday and Sunday, my kids know I'm going to be home, and I'm going to be home at 6 o'clock, and or you know, and sometimes I'm on calls till late. But absolutely, like, just for me, I got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. This I'll never get this time back.
Yeah.
And so, if there's a silver lining, it's that I'm seeing a lot more of them. And my oldest son has Taekwondo in an hour and a half, so I'll be excited to go see him.
Nice. I love it. All right. Well, we are looking forward to our partnership with Hyper Ice and obviously using their products and integrating it into our gyms and our programs. So very much looking forward to the results. And so far, it's obviously been incredible. And we appreciate you sharing your story and your time. And we know Hyper Ice is going to be, you know, even, well, I don't know if we can get bigger, but yeah, it'll look forward to the rise in the future.
Well, I'm always glad to share some time with my former brethren from Australia.
Nice. All right. Good. Love it. All right, Ant. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good one, man. Take care. See you.
Awesome. Fantastic. We're good. Thanks so much, Ant. That was great. All right, guys. There you have it. An incredible interview with the founder of Hyper Ice, Anthony. Thank you so much for being on the show. Guys, the only thing we ask of you, this is why we put the show out for free, is just to share it with someone, post it on your stories, tag us if you enjoyed this episode. That is all we ever ask. So we appreciate everyone that is listening today. And then, of course, if you guys are interested in checking out the Hyper Ice tools, hyperice.com. And then if you're interested in purchasing any of those tools, the code is MMP, and that's going to get you 15% off any of the products at any of the stores internationally, in the US, in Australia, wherever. And then, of course, as well, guys, you heard about it at the start, the dating app for fitness people. It is called Fitify, and to get that app, to download that app for those of you out there that are single, that are looking for people who value health and fitness like you do, all you have to do is go to the link, which is in the description of this episode. So open up your podcast app, wherever you're listening to this, and then in the description of this episode, there's a link. Tap that link and you can jump on board. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.